Welcome to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. I am Doc Mike, host of the podcast. A series of Forrest Gump-like events have brought me to where I am, a small-town country dentist. My experiences in country living, country freedom, country dentistry, and my reaction to pertinent current events will help you live a life of more freedom and less worry. Thank you for choosing the Redneck Dentist Podcast. So let's get to today's freedom-inspiring episode.
Yeah, let's get to it, for crying out loud. It's another show here on the Real Liberty Media. Doc Mike here, your host on the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Holy cow, I got some fun stuff to share with you guys today. First of all, let's get through the, you know, the regular stuff. And that is, this is the fastest hour on Real Liberty Media, and I don't turn left. Don't care if you like it or not. And could you please post to any of the social media sites you use, see if we can get some more people to come in to chat, say hello, have some conversations, you know, and just have a good time for an hour on a Saturday night. Or, you know, if you're listening on podcast, I sure appreciate it. And if you would, always, you know, show some kind of favor for the podcast wherever you're listening. It really helps me out. And if you don't like it, be sure and hit that dislike button twice. Or the like button twice. It doesn't matter. Just hit a button, for crying out loud. All right, you guys, this is incredible. So the bee guy came. The bee guy came on Thursday, and on Friday, they gave me a gallon of honey from the bees they just put up here this year, just in April, I think, they put the bees up. Man, I was so excited, a whole gallon. He said he took 5 buckets of, I don't know what they take out of those things, frames, I guess. You know, honeycomb and honey. They took 5 buckets out, and they just gave us a gallon. That was just incredible. And it is so awesome. I mean, number one, it's honey, okay? It's honey. You guys, you know the one awesome thing about honey, besides it's honey? Okay, the other awesome thing about honey, it doesn't spoil. Like, it doesn't spoil. It's an amazing, you know, kind of feature of honey that it doesn't spoil. You know, there's a lot of other benefits of having, you know, honey straight off your own property or your own, well, region, location, whatever you want to call it. You know, a lot of people say it helps with allergies and stuff because you're, you know, but whatever. But it's just great to have, like, and to have so much production, man. I guess he said the bees are, like, really happy up here. You know, they're taking care of business and doing what bees do. So that was just awesome. You know, we tried raising bees a couple times ourselves, but, you know, you need somebody to kind of teach us. So hopefully maybe I'll get this guy to teach us what to do now that they've been successful up here. But man, I'm just so excited. You know, the garden is producing like crazy. There's no way to keep up with it. Like, we're in, you know, full-on food preservation mode and eating fresh stuff out of the garden. Today we had an omelet with some of that wild spinach and some of the peppers that we've grown. I can't remember what else was in it. I can tell you what wasn't in it, cheese or ham. You know, heart attack 2 weeks ago. Being good, the diet thing really hasn't been an issue for me at all. You know, I was kind of already losing weight anyway. And this, you know, just put some more kind of restrictions on, you know, the stuff that I can eat. And I mean, really, I don't even think it's that. I think if you really just pay attention to portion control, especially when you're eating stuff that supposedly isn't good for you, Although I'm going to tell you, I'm going to pass on some information today that's going to probably blow some of your mind. But anyway, it really hasn't been hard to adapt to the new foods. Like, I pretty much like all food. Like, I'm one of those people, like, there's very few things that I would say I don't like. Now, there's some things that are probably really low on the list, but there's not many of those. I mean, most everything that I've ever eaten, I like. And so what I'm getting at is that I've made some changes that I think they're going to be good changes. Number one, I eat fish a lot more. Now, for some people, be like, ugh, fish, you know, I don't like fish. Well, I do. I happen to like fish. And one thing that I like to do is I like to eat sardines. And I hadn't eaten sardines in a long time. But sardines and olive oil is a perfect lunchtime snack, you know, with some other food that you can have, like a whole grain cracker or something like that. But yeah, so, you know, it was kind of easy to make a transition to a heart healthier diet for me, because it just so happens that I like all food. So it's just like, okay, the stuff that I used to love, like, you know, a double bacon cheeseburger, those are going to be few and far between. You know, biscuits and gravy, or a country fried steak with gravy. Yeah, it's going to be pretty rare that I get to eat those things, because, you know, I've got to take care of the ticker for a while anyway. I want to enjoy some retirement at some point. Who knows when? I don't know. But, yeah, you know, and I'm eating, you know, it doesn't matter. But the point is, it's been easy, and it's really nice to have all this food that we planted in the garden coming on now. There's an endless supply of new fun things to eat all the time and give away. You know, we're giving away food too, which is awesome. I think it's helping some people out. So, but I got to tell you guys one funny thing. I don't know if this is common for people who've had a heart attack. But one of the things that affected me immediately, and I don't know for certain what thing this is, I have a feeling it's blood thinners, but I get cold, like, so easily. I know part of that is probably losing some body fat. I've lost like 15, probably 17 pounds, but 15 at least. And I just get cold, like cold. And I've never been that way. I've always been really warm, you know, always, you know, like my body temperature regulates really good and I'm always comfortable. But I'm going to tell you, this is almost embarrassing to share, but in bed last night, and I mean, it hasn't been, like, it's been 90 a couple days here, but mostly it's been in the 80s. Today, I think, is in the mid-70s, so yeah, it was a little chilly for me, but last night when I went to bed, we'd made some adjustments because I'd been so dang cold at bedtime, and I can't even tell you how many things I had on me when I went to bed. I don't mean clothes, I mean covers. Like, I had a sheet, I had a blanket, then I had a down comforter, then I had a foot warmer, electric kind of foot warmer, then I had another comforter, and just to make sure, I had another comforter on top of that. My wife said to me this morning, I don't know how you could sleep with all that stuff on. Did you sleep well? And I was like, man, I slept like a baby. And that's pretty much true. I was weighted down so I couldn't move. You know how people tuck their babies in and they're just like snug as a bug in a rug, you know, can't move. That's what I felt like last night. Now, listen, I'm not going to continue doing that. I did it last night because I don't know why. I think we were just goofing around, experimenting. But tonight I'm going to shed one or two of those comforters. I'm going to tell you guys something else. So on the 90-degree days, you know, I come home from work, or if I wasn't working, I like to sit in this open area out here right next to the studios. There's a little covered area, you know, three walls of the house surround it, and the roof is over it, and it's just covered area, and I have a TV out there, and, you know, have a refrigerator out there, and, but to sit out there recently, even when it was 90 degrees, I am not kidding you, I had a wool stocking cap on, I had all my clothes on, I had a coat on, and then I had a down blanket over covering my entire self, just so I could sit outside in 90 degree temperature and watch a baseball game. Oh, I'm never going to live this down now. I'm sharing way too much. Okay, let's get on to some. I'm going to start off with something I think is really kind of interesting, maybe amazing. I don't know. You guys may not find it so amazing. But in Australia, they have identified 139 new species. This was a story that was published on August 9th, 2022. I found it on Epoch Times. And it says, Australian scientists have named and described more than 100 new species, including an ant that protects butterfly larvae, a millipede with more than 1,000 legs, and a fish that lives 100 meters below the surface in the past year. Isn't that incredible? That we live in a day and age where, you know, I mean, everybody thinks that, you know, we're all so smart, we all know everything. But really, I mean, 139 new species they've just identified in Australia over the past, who knows, 10, 15, 20 years. With only about 25% of Australia's species known to science, scientific names are vital for researchers, governments, and the community to better understand the nation's vast ecosystem. It's just amazing to me. I'm going to post all these notes, hopefully. I'm really trying to get to the point where I have good show notes that you could actually go to the show notes and click on the links, and it just takes you to these articles. You know, it's probably my one weakness as a podcaster is having really good show notes. Like, if you guys look at Behind the Woodshed with Hal Anthony, man, that dude's got some frickin' notes, man. I don't know how he does it, but I'm telling you, this new software I'm using, the Obsidian software, it has made life so easy that hopefully I'm going to try today and just transfer all these links right into my show notes, and we'll see how that goes. I don't even know how many people use them, but, you know, then when I say something like on podcast, hey, I'm going to post this link so you can go and see it, I really think I ought to actually post the link, right? That'd probably be a good idea. All right, so where was I? Oh, so if you go to this, article, man, they have pictures of some of these critters that they identified. So that's kind of cool. I think it's really neat. Easily. I did say easily. Yeah. Okay, moving on. So I wanted to share this story with you because it just came up this week. Let me see when the date on this is, actually, August 24th, 2022. This is going to kind of blow you guys away, honestly. I'm going to give you a little history about my beliefs in cholesterol, and I've probably talked about it before. But when they were originally discussing what you know, level of cholesterol is damaging or harmful to humans. The committee that was deciding that, it either had 11 people on it or 12 people on it. I think it was 12. And 11 of those 12 people had financial interest in the statin drugs that supposedly reduce cholesterol. So if you ever think, you know, that, oh, and a lot of us here on Real Liberty Media, a lot of us anarcho-capitalists, libertarians, what have you, you know, we never trust the government, which I think you're seeing every day more reason not to trust the government. But this committee had, you know, only one person on the committee didn't have a financial interest in seeing that cholesterol got lowered with these statin drugs. You see what I'm saying? So they all sit around and go, okay, what's an acceptable level of cholesterol? And they came up with some number, and they go, okay, we got to get everybody in the world down to this number. So start writing those statin prescriptions. You know, all you doctors out there, and here, we're going to give you some incentive to write these prescriptions. And, you know, you got to write this prescription for this drug because that's the one we all have financial interest in. We all own stock in these pharmaceuticals, and we know this is the one, these are the ones that'll work. So, you know, docs started writing prescriptions for cholesterol-reducing drugs, which are statins. And pretty soon, all these, you know, this committee was like, oh crap, you know, we're running out of patients. So we got to lower the number even more. So they kind of came up with another number like, okay, that, you know, that's not enough. We need to lower the cholesterol number some more. So we need, you know, more statin prescriptions or more often or more frequency or stronger statin meds or whatever. And then pretty soon they were like, okay, we got everybody down to that number. Let's start giving it to fat kids because, you know, fat kids obviously have high cholesterol. So then they started writing these prescriptions for kids that were overweight. You know, and of course they could test their cholesterol. They eat, you know, Happy Meal cheeseburgers and fries, milkshakes. Of course their cholesterol is probably going to be a little high. So anyway, yeah. You know, and eventually they get to the point where, okay, everybody's just going to have to be on a statin because cholesterol is bad, right? Well, not so fast. I have a story for you. I kind of want to go back to this page. Oh, okay, there we go. All right, and I'm gonna just read through. Wait a minute. Did I copy some of this? Come on, baby. Where did that story go? Oh, yeah. No, we started off with the Australia story. That was awesome. Okay. This is what I pulled out of this article that I want to share. For those who aren't sure, the conventional health community is wholly in support of individual health when it comes to cholesterol levels, which in some cases still adheres to the storyline that too much cholesterol increases the risk of heart disease. You're right to be concerned. Now listen, I never bought into the cholesterol argument. That's the whole point I was making, is that I knew that the people on the committee had a financial interest in getting everybody on statins. So I was like, you know what? I don't think this is accurate. And besides that, I have a degree in biology, and I happen to know that cholesterol is in every single cell in the human body. And we need cholesterol to keep our brains working, for crying out loud. So I was always kind of skeptical about this whole cholesterol story in the first place. And by the way, I just want to remind you all, this heart attack I had blockages in three arteries. None of it was cholesterol. None of it. It was blood clots. And I talked last show, I think, about how clear my health history had been, even in the last 15 to 18 months, when I had a full workup on my heart, on my carotids, on my brain, I had that diverticulitis about 2 years ago, which, you know, I looked at, you know, my gut x-rays, and I asked the doc, I go, hey, is my aorta, do I have any, you know, cholesterol plaque in my aorta? He goes, hell no. He goes, you have the aorta of a 30-year-old. So I didn't, my heart attack was from purely, well, the vaccine. Let's just spit it out here. I cannot imagine, well, let's just leave it at that. I had blood clots in my heart. I had three arteries blocked. It wasn't cholesterol. It was blood clots. All the rest of my arteries are fine. They have been forever. Never had high blood pressure. Never had high cholesterol. Even though I'm not the greatest, you know, don't have the greatest diet in the world, I still kind of manage some kind of balance. Well, especially now, I'm being really good. But this, what I want to share with you is really interesting. It says, cholesterol, the soft, waxy substance found in every cell in your body, is used to produce several of your body's vital functions, including those that involve hormones and vitamin D. About 75% of it is made by your liver, and the remainder is derived from foods you eat. 25% is in your brain. So just imagine, man, if you really did cut out... I had a side thought there. No wonder people are so stupid. We put them on statins, and now they got no cholesterol in their brain. Their brain won't function. So 25%. I mean, your entire body, every single cell in your entire body has cholesterol in it. So, you know, maybe we've been doing more harm than good by putting people on statins. And hang on one sec. And actually, this article kind of gets close to kind of specifically saying that. It's an astute observation when you read studies showing conclusively that cholesterol has very little to do with heart disease. Even more importantly, cholesterol is crucial for your health. If it's too low, then eventually your hormones, disease risk, cell signaling pathways, and yes, your heart will suffer. If it's too low. In fact, new research shows that a too low, low-density lipoprotein level could put you at risk for a stroke. The 2015 DGAC will not bring forward this recommendation because available evidence shows no appreciable relationship between consumption of dietary cholesterol and serum blood cholesterol. So what that says is there's no correlation between what cholesterol you eat, you know, red meat, lard, you know, pork belly, bacon, and the level, serum level, blood level cholesterol, consistent with the AHA/ACC, American Heart Association, American College of Cardiology report. Cholesterol is not a nutrient of concern for overconsumption. Now, for those of us who are over 20 years old, well, most of us, what have you heard all your life? You know, limit cholesterol intake, limit your fat intake, and maybe that's good advice. But here we are like 40, 50 years into this, and we're finding out, you know, it's one of the worst things we could do is, you know, cut down on cholesterol. Your body needs it, for crying out loud. And I think as with everything else in life, you know, you make the choices. Make good choices. You know, everything in moderation. Just a well-balanced diet, maybe. But maybe not. I mean, maybe it doesn't matter. One of the people in this article was talking about, well, you know, which things should you limit that are going to kill you? I mean, eventually you're going to die, right? And so die from which thing? I mean, maybe some people would love to eat, you know, double bacon cheeseburgers every single day and die at 28. Maybe that's fine. And who are we to say no? You know, I always thought, you know, as long as whatever you are doing isn't harming me, I don't care. You know, don't come to me for sympathy, though. If whatever you're doing is harming you and all of a sudden one day, yeah, you're not going to make it or you have a stroke or whatever, and yeah, that was your choice. And that's good. I think we should have a choice to live however the heck we want to live. Let's look at what else this article says. While total cholesterol is a poor, if not utterly worthless, risk marker for heart disease, doctors have focused on it to the exclusion of how it might affect other causes of death. It does you little good to save yourself from heart disease if it means that you increase your risk of death from cancer. All-cause mortality, death from anything, is the most appropriate measure to use when looking at risk factors. When it comes to your risk of death from heart disease, there's much more evidence that inflammation is at the bottom of heart disease rather than high cholesterol, just as it is for a number of other serious diseases. If you want to find what might help you live longer, that's the premise of a lengthy Japanese study published in the Annals of Nutrition and Metabolism. As the feature study, it notes that regardless of someone's age, people with higher cholesterol live longer. Yeah, I wouldn't like seizures either. A note in the chat room. Yeah, I wouldn't like seizures either. But isn't that a crazy study that they did and they found that people with higher cholesterol levels live longer? And let me tell you something. Rochelle's mom, who when I met her, she was 80, probably 80-something years old. No, probably 78, something like that. And she was overweight. She weighed like 260. She lived to be 97. And like every time, you know, she was old school, man. They would bake stuff. You know, we always had baked goods. And she would always say, "Give me a pound of butter. Put a pound of butter on that piece of toast." I mean, she didn't care about, you know, kind of cholesterol levels and stuff. Yeah, she died at 97 with blocked arteries in her heart, but I mean, they knew that her heart was failing anyway. She had congestive heart failure. And I've known a lot of people that you kind of wonder, like, how in the hell have you lived this long? I mean, look at you. Right? I'm sure there's some people look at me and say the same thing. Let's see what else. As discussed in Section 2, elderly people with the highest cholesterol levels have the highest survival rates, irrespective of where they live in the world. The study adjusted for several heart risk factors like smoking, high blood pressure, and a history of diabetes mellitus. Participants were placed in groups depending on whether their cholesterol levels were low, medium, or high. And those with the highest cholesterol levels were found to have the lowest death rate. Isn't that crazy? So I'm not going to say, you know, go out and eat all the fat you want. Because I just, like I said, you know, like balance. Everything in balance, man. Eat some fruit, eat some vegetables, eat some whole grains, eat some fat. Don't be afraid of it. And I'm no health expert, but I'm just reading from this report, man. And it sounds like an awesome report. I mean, I'm glad we have, you know, it's kind of like the whole COVID thing. You actually still have scientists who believe in science and data and actually doing some studies. And I don't know how in the heck they get the money to do stuff like this. This has got to piss the statin docs off. But I'm going to bring it up. I have my cardiac follow-up on... I have my cardiac follow-up on Wednesday, and I start cardiac rehab on Friday. And I'm going to ask my cardiac doc, you know, because now, so think about this. So I'm going to just tell you, I know personal health information, I don't care. I'm on a blood thinner. I'm on two blood pressure meds, and I'm on a statin and a Pepcid. I don't know why they gave me Pepcid. I honestly don't. But honestly, let's go down the list and see why did they give me any of these five meds. So blood thinner, okay, I get it. So I don't throw any more clots and clog up my heart because it was a clot. They were clots. Okay. So I'll accept that, a blood thinner. Now the two blood pressure medications. I've never had high blood pressure. I don't have high blood pressure now. So the instructions are you're to take your blood pressure if it's below 120 over 80. Either number, if either number is above, you got to take one of the two blood pressure medicines or both of them. So since a heart attack and before, because people in my office used to challenge me like, you know, I bet your blood pressure is high. And I'd be like, here, try it. You're going to be surprised. It's never been high. So in the 2 weeks since my heart attack, I think one day, maybe two, let's stretch it and just say two. 2 days I was above 120, barely. So why am I on two blood pressure medications if I don't have high blood pressure? And why am I on a statin, a cholesterol reducing drug, when I don't have arterial plaque? These are the questions we're going to have to get answered, because I'm not going to be a dick, honestly, and just not take these medications, at least not right now. But I am going to have those discussions with my doc and say, okay, like, have you seen this study? Like, you know, obviously there's more than one study. They said that this study was repeated in multiple countries. And if that's the case, then they have a lot of data to support the fact that, you know, cholesterol isn't the problem, inflammation is. And if I've never had high cholesterol in the first place, why am I on a cholesterol-reducing medication? Anyway, yeah, I know, it's crazy. A crazy time in my life, for sure. I was just thinking the other day, too, just yesterday, I was like, man, it's a good thing I was riding that bike all that time. You know, every, five or six days a week, I would ride 20 to 30 minutes on my stationary bike, you know, like religiously. I would ride. I would just ride to watch, I'd watch something on TV, listen to my favorite podcast, and I would ride. And I injured my knee, and then I had the heart attack, you know, so I've been off for like 2 months. But I'm thinking, you know, I'm actually going to be in pretty good shape. When I go to cardiac rehab, I'm going to be in pretty good shape. I can see already, by taking my blood pressure every day and multiple times a day, because sometimes I just want to make sure. So I take it in the morning, you know, to see. And I take it a couple times just to make sure I'm getting a good reading. And then if I come home at lunch, I'll sit down for 5 minutes and relax and then take my blood pressure again. And that's it. I don't take it in the evening. But yeah, so I know that the work I did before has paid off, you know, and it even kind of goes back to this argument, like, well, why did I have a heart attack? I mean, I had a clean bill of health 18 months ago. I still don't have, atherosclerotic plaque. I still don't have high blood pressure. I had a heart attack. It's like the only thing I had was a heart attack. So if the only medication I need is a blood thinner, then that's what I should be on. I shouldn't be on blood pressure medications. which is cool. They make it optional. It's like, okay, you take your blood pressure, and if your blood pressure is elevated above 80 or above 120, then you take one or two of these medications. Well, haven't had to take it. So that's cool that it's optional, but the statin is not necessarily optional. They don't say, hey, go have four slices of bacon, some hash browns with gravy, and a couple, you know, over easy fried eggs, and then take your statin so you can keep that cholesterol out of your arteries. No, they just want you to take that statin every single evening, man. So, but you know what? The good thing is that we have a place where we can go and get information like this. You know, that it's really still people who believe in science and want to do the right thing for the rest of the world, humanity or whatever. Or maybe they just want to, you know, have an article published that makes perfect sense. So anyway, I did want to share that information with you. One sec. Wow, that was almost too long, wasn't it? That dead air for that so long a period. I kind of feel like I'm going to sneeze. That's okay. Yeah, maybe I'll do it again. The other thing I did want to share with everybody, I was thinking about this survival tip. I know everybody knows this, but I'm going to share it, and I'm going to invite you to make this a serious part of your first aid supply kit, or maybe even part of your daily routine. And that is aspirin. Because I actually also take a baby aspirin every day, and I have for a long time. Maybe that helped save me a lot of grief going through this. But the other thing is, you know, when the dispatcher heard what was going on with me, when she heard me on the phone, violently dry heaving, I think she assumed I was having a stroke, and she told Rochelle to get me four aspirin, chew them up, and swallow them. So, you know, it's a good little drug to have always available, 100% of the time available. So, go out and get yourself a bottle of children's chewable aspirin, or get yourself the little 81 milligram, aspirin that you swallow. Either way, have it, keep it at the ready, easily accessible. I'm not telling y'all to go start taking an aspirin a day. That's your choice. Probably a lot of us could benefit from taking an aspirin a day. But it's good to have. I mean, I'm not going to say it's a miracle drug, but it's a pretty dang good drug because, you know, if the paramedics have you chew up four aspirin because they think you're having either a heart attack or a stroke, I guess you'd be in pretty good shape if you had four to take right away. And I mean, then, so maybe if you think you're having a heart attack, you just chew a few aspirin and just see if it helps or not. It could be very beneficial. It could save your life, I'm sure. But anyway, so keep that in mind. Get yourself some baby aspirin. You know, look at it often. Think about using it. But know where it is. So in case you need some right now, you know where it is, how to get your hands on it, and how to get it, you know, in somebody. All right. Moving on, I have some really stupid, this will be fun. We're going to do this next. I really wanted to share this. What is this? Oh, there it is. So this is kind of funny because, you know, I'm always so negative when I see anything about climate change. And it just drives me so crazy. But this article was a gem. And this is in rightandfree.com. I don't know who turned me on to that, but somebody did along the way. But let's listen to some of these climate predictions. I'm going to read you the prediction, and then you try and figure out when it was said, okay? So let's make sure we start at the top here. I don't want to miss any gems. Okay, here we go. The trouble with almost all environmental problems, says Paul Ehrlich, the population biologist, is that by the time we have enough evidence to convince people, you're dead. We must realize that unless we are extremely lucky, everybody will disappear in a cloud of blue steam in 20 years. That was in 1969. Moving on. No real action has been taken to save the environment, Ehrlich maintains, and it does need saving. Ehrlich predicts that the oceans will be as dead as Lake Erie in less than a decade. That was 1970. This one from the Boston Globe. Scientist predicts a new ice age by the 21st century. Air pollution may obliterate the sun and cause a new ice age in the first third of next century. If the current rate of increase in electric power generation continues, the demands for cooling water will boil dry the entire flow of the rivers and streams of the continental United States. By the next century, the consumption of oxygen and combustion processes worldwide will surpass all of the processes which return oxygen to the atmosphere. That was in 1970. The world could be as little as 50 or 60 years away from a disastrous new ice age, a leading atmospheric scientist predicts. In the next 50 years, the fine dust man constantly puts into the atmosphere by fossil fuel burning could screen out so much sunlight that the average temperature could drop by 6 degrees. If sustained over several years, 5 to 10, he estimated, such a temperature decrease could be sufficient to trigger an ice age. That was in 1971, so we're beyond 50 years of that. Dear Mr. President, we feel obliged to inform you on the results of the scientific conference held here recently. The main conclusion of the meeting was that global deterioration of climate by order of magnitude larger than any hitherto experienced by civilized mankind is a very real possibility and indeed may be due very soon. The cooling has natural cause and falls within the rank of processes which produced the last ice age. The present rate of the cooling seems fast enough to bring glacial temperatures in about a century. That was Brown University, 1972. Let's see what somebody, this is a comment. However widely the weather varies from place to place and time to time, when meteorologists take an average of temperatures around the globe, they find the atmosphere has been growing gradually cooler for the past three decades. The trend shows no indication of reversing. I don't know when that was. Climatological Cassandras are becoming increasingly apprehensive. For the weather aberrations they are studying may be the harbinger of another ice age. Telltale signs are everywhere. From the unexpected persistence and thickness of pack ice in the waters around Iceland to the southern migration of the warm-loving creature like the armadillo from the Midwest, since the 1940s, the mean global temperature has dropped 2.7 degrees. We hey, well, I guess we fixed that, huh? Although that figure is at best an estimate, it is supported by other convincing data. When climatologist George J. Kukla of Columbia University's Lamont Doherty Geological Observatory and his wife Helena analyzed satellite weather data from the Northern Hemisphere, they found that the area of ice and snow cover had suddenly increased by 12% in 1971, and the increase has persisted ever since. This is in 1974. Areas of Baffin Island in the Canadian Arctic, Baffin, for example, were once totally free of any snow in summer. Now they are covered year-round. That was in 1974. A senior UN environmental official says entire nations could be wiped off the face of the earth by rising sea levels if the global warming trend is not reversed by the year 2000. That was in 1989. Unless drastic measures to reduce greenhouse gases are taken within the next 10 years, the world will reach a point of no return. That's former Vice President Al Gore, 2006. The world is going to end in 12 years if we don't address climate change. And you change, and that's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I just loved seeing that article come up in my feed somewhere. I don't know how I ran across it, but I was just like, this is flipping hilarious. We gotta check this out. Because it is so ridiculous, man. I think the earth is so amazing and so capable of repairing itself. It's going to repair itself. When we're all gone, it's going to repair itself. And if we stay here, it's going to repair itself. It's an amazing system we have here. You know, water. It's not like we produce water from somewhere else. We have the same amount of water in this system that's ever been here. I'm pretty sure there's not like a water generator somewhere. Oh, I know. People are going to be like, he's an idiot. Doesn't he ever see it rain? Well, yeah, it rains. It falls to the earth. It gets absorbed in the soil. It gets taken up by plants. Some of it runs all the way back to the ocean, for crying out loud, where it's recycled, like picked up again in clouds, brought over the land masses and dumps on the soil again. And some plants, I mean, they use water to convert carbon dioxide to oxygen. So it's a great system we have. The hype that we have been selling for literally decades has been the same hype. You know, some idiot puts their time limit on when we must do things before the world will come to an end, before an ice age is triggered, before we burst into flames and evaporate. The thing they don't ever take into account is how well the earth does at repairing itself. And I'm not saying we should be, you know, irresponsible in the way we handle the earth, but I think, like I said with dieting, there's a happy medium. You know, like all things in proportion, you know, moderation in all things. Like, let's not go too crazy. But there's always going to be people trying to, you know, I guess just make a taxable event out of everything. Trying to make sure that we all pay a price one way or another, right? Right before I came on air, Rochelle was reading some story in her newsfeed. She uses a newsfeed that I absolutely hate. And I don't mean like CNN or something like that. I mean, she uses this Edge something on her phone. And I just find it annoying as hell, so I turned it off when I got my phone. But she said in California, Californians are now being told to that they have to dispose of all batteries, and I'm not talking about LiPos now. I'm talking about nickel cadmium alkaline batteries, you know, the Energizer, Duracells, Everready's, you know, your common everyday battery. They're being told that they can only turn those batteries into hazardous waste disposal areas. And that if they find a battery in your garbage, you're being fined for it. And here's my problem with this. You know, sometimes it sucks to have a scientific mind versus that emotional thing people do. So the stuff that goes into a battery, you know where it came from? It came from the earth. I mean, it was literally mined from the earth and processed into whatever kind of form we needed to make a battery. And then it goes in the landfill, and eventually it goes back into the earth. And I know it's not that simple, but it's close to being that simple. But it's just another way of making people suffer, in my opinion. And I mean, like, it kind of goes against the whole electric thing, too. You know, if you want to have electric cars, and Gavin Newsom wants, you know, all fossil fuel propelled vehicles eliminated in the state, he doesn't even want to sell them anymore. He wants to ban the sale of fossil fuel powered vehicles. Well, guess what? All your vehicles are going to run on batteries. And not those nice nickel-cadmium batteries. You got some nasty stuff in those car batteries, so guess what? Yeah, you're probably going to end up, I'll bet you, I don't know this for sure, but in no time, you're going to have to pay a hefty price deposit to get rid of that battery. Like, it might be a pre-purchase fee that you have to pay a price for disposal of that car battery. They are nasty. But again, everything that went in that battery came from the earth. So how bad is it? I don't know, honestly. I have some idea of what's in those batteries. But just imagine this. So you're going to be forced to purchase an electric powered vehicle. They're trying to get rid of all fossil fuel powered, you know, energy producing plants. They want you not just, obviously, we don't want you storing power in batteries, for God's sakes. You're going to pay the price for having those handled now. I mean, it really kind of sends a mixed message. Okay, we don't want you to use any more alkaline batteries. Oh, but we want you to buy this electric car. Okay. Wait, so is electric power good or not? I'm confused. Because you want me to buy an electric car, which has a ginormous frickin' battery in it. In fact, most of the car is battery. But don't use AA's in my remote control for my TV. Don't throw them away in the garbage. Let me ask you something. Where do you think these batteries are going to end up? Come on now. Where are all, to look around your house now, look at everything that isn't plugged into the wall that actually does something. There's a battery in it of some kind. You know, your remote controls. I can't really think of too many things, but yeah, remote controls are the big thing. there's some devices. I mean, I have Bluetooth speakers. They have a battery in them. I mean, none of them run on, you know, magic. There's a battery in there somewhere. So you plug it in, charge it up, you know, and then you drain it. I mean, your earbuds, they have batteries in them. Flashlights. You know, there's a ton of things that have batteries in them. Yeah, this is kind of crazy. So why do we go to wireless? What was the deal with going wireless? It was so genius not to have wires all over the place and be, you know, sucking power right out of the wall. But no, now that's bad. Well, I guess if you're in California, which I'm sorry if you're in California. I truly am. I mean, but it's your choice. I have a brother-in-law in California. I think he's, like, you know, questionable. He probably needs to have his head examined or something. Or maybe you get in California and you're just stuck. It's like you can't get out for one reason or another. Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. But that's craziness. It's craziness. I'm gonna go through this list. I really wanted to you know, I think last week I said I have about a bajillion things to talk about. I knew I wasn't going to get through them all, but I wanted to go through this one list with you because it just seems like, man, we just keep going. I'm just going to go through this list of stuff because more and more truths are coming out. I mean, they're actually coming out in mainstream media. They're actually coming out in sources other than independent news sources and saying, yeah, we kind of screwed up on this whole COVID thing. I mean, somebody even came out recently and said, look, this is what you need to do with the whole COVID vaccination or, you know, COVID disease, whatever you want to, whichever way you want to go. Really, this should be a self-assessment. Like, you decide. Now that they've, you know, virtually forced everybody into getting the jab, now it's like, you know what, you decide whether you need the jab or you just want to deal with getting COVID. But listen to this little list I have. I won't get into each one of these things too quickly, but these are all studies that have shown these things actually exist. So damage to semen, so male reproductive damage, from the vaccine. Blood clotting deaths. They've been documented. Hell, I guess I was almost one. Blood clotting deaths from this vaccine. They've been documented and proven. Chickenpox has been found to be reactivated by the vaccine, the jab. Increases COVID infection because it's so damn inefficient. The spike protein that they based the original jab on was useless. The second they made it, it was no longer useful because the spike protein had changed in the virus. So it did no good, but they made damn sure to get most of the world jabbed. Abnormal menstrual cycles now has been documented through scientific studies to actually be true. And not only that, there's a ton of other stuff that happens. Where did I that list? Oh, here it is. Oh, come on, baby. Don't let me down now. Where was that? Oh, here it is. Now listen to all these things that have had an effect on women. And we're almost out of time. I'm going to go fast. Abnormal uterine bleeding. Miscarriages are 50-fold greater. Fetal chromosomal abnormalities are 100-fold greater. Fetal malformation is 50 times greater. Fetal cystic hygroma. Fetal cardiac disorders. Fetal arrhythmias. Fetal cardiac arrest. I'll see you guys on Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern.
Thank you for listening to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Please show your support for the podcast. This podcast is not on the biggest platforms, but it is on the best free speech platforms. Until next time, remember, all bleeding eventually stops.